Big Show Friday, hour number two. Thank you for being with us. It is the Glass in the Morning radio program. News Talk 96.1 AM 1370 and WGCLRadio.com. Our good friend Julie Warren is on assignment today with her real job, so we'll talk a little bit Hoosiers, and we've got plenty to do this week and weekend. We've had a tremendously busy week, and we'll check in this morning with the Atlanta Falcons' biggest fan, employee of the month, you name it. It's our good friend Zach Osterman from the Indianapolis Star. Good morning. How are you?
I'm fantastic, Glass. How about you?
Super Bowl weekend, triple overtime, National Signing Day, trip to Wisconsin. You got anything going on you want to talk about?
Yeah, I know. It's been a busy one, isn't it?
It has been, and it started off with National Signing Day. We'll just go in chronological order here, just trying to get caught up with everything. Tom Allen, it's his first class. They had a big celebration before the basketball game, on Wednesday evening at the North End Zone facility. A couple takeaways from me, and I want to get your thoughts on it. Number one, Tom Allen hasn't had to do this before, so it's always interesting to see how a guy puts his first class together. But two things that jumped out, it looks like it's spread across the board, trying to fill multiple depth chart positions. And number two, maybe I'm looking into this too much, but the quarterback that he did bring in is a little bit different than the quarterbacks we've seen maybe through the last regime. Tell me your thoughts from a busy Wednesday at the football side of things.
Yeah, you know, the class really started emphasizing big bodies on both lines of scrimmage. That was dating back to Kevin Wilson, sort of mapping out what he wanted from the class, what he felt the class needed to give the program. But Tom Allen was obviously also a part of that, and Allen even sort of said Wednesday that he felt Indiana didn't do enough to address the defensive line in particular in his first signing day at IU, which would have been when he was defensive coordinator. So, you know, he was pleased that they were able to kind of get a lot of kind of long, tall guys, defensive ends, defensive tackles. I know he feels really good about Juan Harris, a DT from Wisconsin, is already on campus. LaShawn Minor, a tackle from Ben Davis, where obviously Allen used to coach. So definitely kind of hit, I think, what you look at a lot of the big body guys, quote unquote, a lot of them committed early. I mean, you know, Indiana had a lot, if not all, of those guys in the fold before the season even started. So they weren't reaching around trying to get guys late. They got the ones they wanted by and large. You mentioned one guy they do get late, Nick Tronti, the quarterback, Florida's Mr. Football. He was actually committed to Charlotte, but both IU and Arizona offered in January, trying to get him to flip. He flipped to IU. And you're right, he's a dual-threat guy, or at least more of a dual-threat guy. I don't think Tom Allen is looking necessarily for a guy that's going to run the ball 20 times a game at the quarterback position. But what he's looking for is, to use a comparison that anybody who's watched Ole Miss, you know, it might really ring true, a guy like Bo Wallace, a guy like Chad Kelly, quarterback first, I mean, passer first, but a guy that can extend the play. You can call a few design runs for him. A guy that if things break down or if a running lane opens up, he's not going to be afraid to take off. I wouldn't necessarily expect Tronti to be ready to start right away. In fact, I'd be surprised if he was, as I would be with pretty much any true freshman quarterback. But bringing in a kid like that, this class was always going to have a quarterback. That's a signal, I mean, the most tangible signal yet of Allen maybe having a slightly different, as you said, vision for that position than Kevin Wilson did.
Were you impressed with the numbers that came in on National Signing Day? Because sometimes when you turn a staff over and you've got some key recruiters or key position coaches leave, sometimes that gives kids an out to say, well, I wasn't quite sure anyhow. Were you surprised that they only had really one guy that didn't make it that they thought was going to come 4 months ago?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned, I mean, Kurt Rufdahl is a tight end from Carmel, your alma mater.
That's right.
Was the only one that decommitted and went, I mean, I think he wound up in Nebraska.
Nebraska's right, yes.
There were some others that certainly kind of kept their options open or at least were kind of open to other schools when guys left. I know Indiana worked really hard to hold on to Peyton Hendershot, an athletic tight end type prospect from Tri-West High School. Penn State really kicked the tires on him. But to your point, I mean, it was a smaller class. You know, they only signed 23, and they were always expected to sign a little bit under just with the way their scholarships laid out. Didn't have a ton of them coming open that you're technically allowed to sign 25. So it's a slightly undersized class. But they were, I mean, they were able to beat back interest from, I'm trying to think of other, I mean, Caleb Jones, Tom Allen said there was an SEC school involved late. I guess if that's Missouri. And it kind of speaks, I think, a little bit, you know, when the transition happened from Kevin Wilson to Tom Allen, it struck me how many former players I talked to who had not played for Tom Allen who were excited and encouraged about the future under Tom Allen. And that sort of told me that word had kind of gotten out about him a little bit, I guess, for lack of a better term. And it's not the only reason that they kept the vast majority of this class together, but it's certainly, I think, a testament to, you know, what Allen is kind of able to sell, or what Allen has been selling to guys since becoming head coach, that, to your point, they only lose one in the whole process.
Zach Osterman's our guest this morning. He's the beat writer for Indiana football and basketball at the Indianapolis Star. And the one story that I guess would be the most surprising out of this week was everybody thought that Sean Watson was going to slide over into the offensive coordinator spot, and that's filled in a way you go. Because obviously Kevin Johns has, I believe, gone on to Western Michigan. Coach Wilson on to Ohio State, obviously the resignation. We knew all that was going on. But do you find this timing awkward, weird, or something different?
No, I mean, keep in mind, Watson wasn't going to be offensive coordinator at Indiana. He was just going to be quarterback's coach.
Okay, quarterback's coach, sorry.
Essentially Pitt offered to make him quarterback's coach and offensive coordinator. So
replacing, you know, Matt Canada, a former Hoosier, ironically enough.
Yes, Matt Canada, who is in LSU now, I believe.
Correct.
But, I mean, not particularly surprising. The timing of things can be, you know, for example, Indiana loses Greg Fry to Michigan. Sometimes you kind of want to wait until after signing day to make hires like that, because guys don't want to leave their current positions, leave their current employers in a huge lurch. Sometimes guys can be lured away last minute. Fry, it would be hard for a coach like Fry to say no to Michigan, obviously. I think generally you kind of just have more options if you wait until after signing day. And again, Pitt was offering Sean Watson more than Indiana was offering him. I don't think anybody at Indiana would begrudge Watson taking that job.
And now the next part of the staff to fill in is going to be the offensive coordinator. What is the outlook for that? We know that Coach Allen announced spring practice is going to start March 4th. The spring game is April 13th. That's kind of a tight window to bring something in. Is that something IU fans should be concerned about?
Well, they've got Mike DeVore.
Mike DeVore, that's right. What am I? Yeah, the quarterback and coach. Coordinator. Do you need to have a quarterback's coach? Because we've seen Richard Lego.
They'll definitely fill that position somehow. And I would be surprised if they move anybody over on staff, because I think you've already got – DeBoard is also going to coach tight ends. Grant Hurd is going to coach wide receivers, and he's quote-unquote passing game coordinator. And my sense, anyway, is that those two together are kind of going to build the offense.
Gotcha.
I mean, everything Tom Allen has said about what he wants offensively sounds like Ole Miss. I mean, maybe not a carbon copy, but a lot of the same principles. And a lot of those principles are not far off from what Kevin Wilson did offensively.
So the personnel will mesh to the system?
Right, exactly. And you bring in Hurd because Hurd's been in Ole Miss's offense as an assistant for a long time. You bring in DeBoard, a guy that more or less ran Lloyd Carr's offense at Michigan, very pro-style. Then he runs Butch Jones' offense at Tennessee, very high, you know, high tempo, spread offense, dual threat QB, Josh Dobbs, all that.
A lot of points scored.
What Dobbs, I should say.
That's right. But you get in trouble if you don't say three-way.
You will absolutely see Indiana, I believe, fill the quarterback's coaching position first. Obviously, I would guess offensive line happens first. It's been open longer. Allen even said on signing day that he expected to have that position filled within about a week.
They don't have much to worry about. Everything's set for the most part, just kind of tinkering, putting some final touches on it, and away you go for spring ball in a month.
Yeah, essentially. And you're right. You want to get those guys in. Right now you're looking at, first of all, Indiana only used to carry four offensive coaches. Wilson, you know, was sort of the fifth offensive assistant. Tom Allen is doing the same thing on defense. He's going to carry four defensive assistants, and he'll be the fifth, you know, the fifth kind of guy in that room, and he's going to put five on offense. Second of all, you've lost every offensive coach now but Dylan McCullough, so you still want to get those guys in quickly. I mean, there's no question about that. If you're building a new offense, and you're right, spring practice starts here actually pretty soon, you want to get those guys in the room together as quickly as possible so that everybody can kind of mesh and gel before they start installing in spring. But I wouldn't worry too much about it right now. If we're still talking about openings in a couple weeks, yeah, maybe then it's time to hit the panic button. Well, I don't know about the panic button, but then it's time to be concerned.
Zach Osterman checking in with us on a very busy week here at WGCL. He's the beat writer for Indiana football and basketball at the Indianapolis Star. Well, that just kicked off your Wednesday, and then you got 3.5 hours at the Assembly Hall, triple overtime winners. You saw career performances from Thomas Bryant, Josh Newkirk, and Robert Johnson. Indiana 110-102 winners over Penn State. All it took was three overtimes, three career highs to beat the Nittany Lions. That's got to help the psyche around that place with the injuries Indiana's dealing with.
I think you're right. I mean, at least insofar as a loss really would have been, I think, dispiriting, losing at home to Penn State. And I'm going to be honest, a loss would have been disastrous for the NCAA tournament resume, too, if they could not have held on against Penn State. And there were a couple times where Penn State had a chance to put them away, a couple times where Indiana had a chance to put Penn State away and couldn't. I think Tom Crean basically said after the game, you know, there were moments where we both could have lost. But, you know, if nothing else, to get that win, I don't know if you want to overstate the way they got it, quote-unquote, you know, kind of digging deep with guys injured, guys out, you know, a lot of fatigue, guys fouled out, and being able to just kind of, you know, endure and outlast Penn State. I you know, how much that resonates, we'll find out as we move forward through the season. But if nothing else, I think, you know, being able to hold on and kind of beat away a really, really bad loss, a dispiriting loss, was big for them.
And the other issue is if confidence, the wonderful immeasurable, is part of this going to be better moving forward, well, you have to take something out of getting off the mat a couple times against Penn State. The bad news is you walk into Ethan Happ, Nigel Hayes, and Bronson Koenig in a building you just don't win in coming up on Sunday. Give me an outlook on that forecast on Super Bowl Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, you're right, and nobody really wins in that building right now. It's going to be difficult for Indiana, particularly if James Blackman's not back, because you're not going to – you're kind of missing that body a little bit. I mean, you know, if Josh Newkirk can give you another, maybe not necessarily 27 points, obviously, but another good scoring night, then maybe you can kind of just sort of match up. I shouldn't say night.
Let me jump in there and ask you about that, because Josh Newkirk's previous high was 11. I mean, 27, that's plus
13.
Oh, I'm sorry. He's still plus 14. He doubled it. Is that reasonable expect?
He had 17 at the end of regulation, which is like, if you're kind of look, I mean, he still sets the season high if the game ends in 40 minutes.
Gotcha. I've led you down the wrong path here. I'm not worried about the overtime part of that. I'm worried about Josh Newkirk having to play at that such of a level, because this was the same fellow that missed his first seven shots at Northwestern and finished 1-for-8 the game before that. Is the answer somewhere in the middle, or do you see this as a breakout?
I mean, I think until James Blackman is back, Indiana kind of has to get that from him. And if he can't provide it, if it's more like Northwestern, then that's going to be tough for Indiana. And I understand that Josh Newkirk is not a volume scorer. He's not necessarily a guy that, you know, he'd wake up every morning and think, I'm going to score 15, I'm going to score 18. But right now, Indiana just kind of needs that. They need it from him. They need it from Devontae Green. Again, maybe not, you know, Devontae Green finish with a double-double. They don't necessarily need that every night unless they go to two or three overtimes in Mass. And Josh Newkirk finishes with, you know, 27 points, 17 in regulation. Can he replicate that exactly all the time? I don't know. But you need – Thomas Bryant is playing very well right now. There's no question about that. Back-to-back double-doubles, he had 31 against Penn State after 23 and 12 at Northwestern. Robert Johnson, again, 27 points is a little bit inflated by having the three overtimes, but you're not surprised to see him as a more prominent part of the offense with James Blackmon hurt. The question is, who steps up next? Because if you're Indiana, two of your four leading scorers are sitting on the bench right now injured. One of them is out, quote-unquote, indefinitely. One of them, we know, OG Anunoby's out for the year. Somebody's got to fill that void. And I'm not, you know, look, if they go down to Madison, nobody's going to think a whole lot less of them. Again, it's very hard to lose there, but I'm talking about, or excuse me, to win there. But I'm talking about the season kind of at large as it unrolls into February. As long as James Blackmon's out, other guys are going to have to fill that void. And you're going to look first to Josh Newkirk, who's a redshirt junior regular starter. And then from there, you probably got to move down to Devontae Green, who has been moved into the starting lineup for Indiana in Blackmon's absence.
And when we talk about the supporting crew as well, injuries are still lingering. Any update on Juwan Morgan, Curtis Jones? You saw some guys. And Deron Davis, I think, needs to step up into that void. Davis and Morgan only played, what, 22 and 21 minutes on Wednesday night, so they won't have that three overtime 50 minutes, 47 minutes dragging with them up to Madison. I think those two, especially against Happ in that front court, have to make a difference on the weekend.
I think you're absolutely right. And Davis had a very good game against Wisconsin in Bloomington. He had 12 points. He was
up for the fight, yeah.
He was. In a game where others weren't, and Indiana, frankly, some of those players admitted they weren't, you know, later in the or after the game. Wisconsin starts that game on a 16-2 run. Juwan Morgan is playing through the foot injury. There are moments when you can tell it bothers him. He had a couple moments in the Northwestern game where he kind of planted his foot, one where it, like his foot just slipped a little bit, and you could tell he kind of wrenched it or tweaked it, and that really bothered him. But, you know, at the same time, he's more or less said he's going to play through it. He didn't have a problem playing through it. He's a tough kid. Everybody remembers sort of what he went through with the shoulder injury last year, shoulder injuries last year, and playing through all that.
Yeah, it just seems he can never – it seems like it just follows him around. If it's not one thing, it's another thing. And just feel bad for the kid. Once he's – like you mentioned, his shoulder gets healthy, and he steps on the referee's foot.
Right, yeah. And it's sort of one of those things where he can't be injury-prone if he's getting injured by stepping on a referee's foot. But you're right, he just can't quite escape it. But he's still getting back to 100%. One of the things Tom Green's talked about with him, too, is just kind of getting him confident again. You know, when a guy's playing hurt, sometimes he can overthink playing hurt, I guess, for lack of a better term.
Or try to avoid it, yeah.
Yeah, and Indiana wants to get him back to a place where he knows, look, there's going to be some pain, but I can do this. I'm physically capable of being out here. Just play natural, and it'll be fine. I think that's kind of the other thing that Indiana's trying to maybe return him to a little bit, if that makes sense.
Why does Wisconsin's style bother Indiana so much? I'm not going to trot out the numbers yet. I'm still trying to look them up. They don't. Nobody, you're right. Nobody plays well up there. Indiana does not play well there. Indiana does not play well against Wisconsin, it seems like, anywhere in the victory department. What does Indiana have to – what code do they need to crack on Sunday at 1 o'clock CBS to pull the upset, because that's what it's going to be, and find a way to keep this thing moving forward?
You know, the thing that always strikes me about Wisconsin is you can't speed them up. And Indiana wants to play a faster game. I think they can play a slower game. And, you know, I've seen Indiana stay close with Wisconsin when both teams scored in the 70s. And I'm talking about in Madison. I've seen Indiana stay close with Wisconsin when both teams scored in the 50s or 60s. But Wisconsin, and this goes back obviously to Bo Ryan's days, and now it's Greg Gard, who was Ryan's long-time assistant, so it's not surprising to see them playing in basically the same ways. They are just so capable of determining the pace of a game at any given point. And sometimes it'll speed up, and if they want to play with that speed, you know, you think about Bo Ryan's last couple of teams. You know, I mean, those teams.
Yeah, Final Four teams.
Those teams would go totally to the wall with you. You know, they had the athletes. They had Kaminsky. They had Decker. They had Jackson. They had Koenig. They had Hayes. Those teams were happy to play at that kind of pace with you. But I think guards slowed things down a little bit more now, gotten a little bit more back to kind of what Bo Ryan maybe really made his bones on in like the 2000s, if you will. Maybe not quite that slow. I mean, there were some years where watching Wisconsin on offense was an exercise in extreme patience.
Yeah, to put it kindly. The Brulewitz era.
The old Wisconsin swing. But I don't think it's quite like that. But they still have that ability to just completely and totally control the pace of the game. And it's always impressed me, whether it's against Indiana, Michigan State, whoever, Wisconsin is so hard to speed up. And especially in that building, and a lot is made of, you know, they use a different basketball, like a ball that basically no one else uses.
That's so right.
They have like a great feel for it, and opposing teams don't. But it's really hard to get Wisconsin to play any way other than the way they want to play. And I think that if you're Indiana, you always want to be blood fast. You want a game that's up and down. You know, I mean, you want a game that's really wide open where you can get out in transition and really kind of exploit teams there. That's where Indiana's so good, is on the break and the secondary break. But it's hard to get Wisconsin in those positions.
And Wisconsin, as we saw here at the Assembly Hall, the Simon Scott Assembly Hall in the first game, you talked about the run they got off to get things started. Bronson Koenig hit, 4-4, 5-5, whatever it was. You've got to make somebody else beat you. I don't think it can. I think you've got to collapse on Happ, and I think you've got to find Koenig. And if Nigel Hayes has to make 14 to 20 shots to beat you, I can live with that, because I think of the three, he is the least accurate, I guess would be the best words.
He's probably the least efficient.
There you go. Because Happ kills you at
the
rim.
He's also, frankly, he's also kind of the one that I'm not sure. I mean, Juwan Morgan is an obvious candidate to start on him. But you know, Juwan Morgan and Zach McRae, I mean, you've got obvious guys to guard Koenig and Happ. With Happ, you can address Happ largely between Thomas Bryant and Deron Davis. You can throw, you know, Devontae Green, who I think is a good developing young defender, at least very athletic in short spaces, and Robert Johnson, and even the little Josh Newkirk at Bronson Koenig. That, you know, that's not a problem. The one thing about Hayes is, if Morgan's less than 100%, it's going to kind of be him and Zach McRoberts, unless you want to shift Robert Johnson over there. I mean, we saw Indiana have put Robert Johnson on Justin Jackson against UNC.
Yep.
Will they try something like that against Hayes? But there's just the natural matchups for Hayes are not as good as maybe they would be.
No, they're not, but I think you got to force Hayes to take the game over, because if Josh McRoberts gets in foul trouble, that doesn't hurt you offensively. If Johnson does, that will hurt you offensively. I don't think Indiana's in a point right now, if Blackman doesn't play, to have Johnson with foul problems, where now you have one less option on offense. I don't think that would be the way. Maybe we'll see some 2-3 as well. Who knows? That's why you play the game. Sometimes you play 40 minutes. Sometimes you play 55. And it'll be a tough one for Wisconsin. Before we let you go quickly, we know you're the biggest Atlanta Falcons fan in the city of Bloomington. Give us your prediction for the Super Bowl.
Oh.
You want to email it to me later, and I'll...
It's one of those things. I've said this throughout this playoff run.
Briefly.
On paper,
Zach grew up in Atlanta. He lived there the first 20 years of his life, 19 years of his life. So this is not some passing fad or some. This is diehard.
I'm just a really big Devontae Green fan. Everybody,
there you go.
I've said this throughout the playoff run, like. On paper, I think the Falcons have a good chance at least to be very, very competitive. I think the one lingering concern is Alex Mack, their center, who is pretty much the reason that their offensive line turned it around this season, is injured, and it's not clear whether he's going to be 100% for the game on Sunday. But on paper, everything the Falcons do, I think they match up well. I think they've got a chance to be competitive and all that. History tells me that the Falcons always find a way to just trip at the final hurdle. And they've spent the whole playoffs playing teams that don't. You know, the Seahawks are one of those teams that, quote-unquote, always find ways to win. The Packers are basically the NFC's closest approximation to the Patriots. Now you play the Patriots, the team that just, no matter how much turnover there is on the roster, no matter who comes and goes, they find a way to win division titles, AFC titles, Super Bowl titles. They've still got Tom Brady. They've still got Bill Belichick, obviously.
I'm taking the Falcons minus three.
Well, I don't.
Or plus three, rather. I want the points, just in case.
Okay, I don't know what that means. I don't gamble. it's hard to honestly. Does that mean New England's going to win?
New England should win by 3 points. So it's going to be close. Right.
I could see that. I could see that a close defeat.
Because that would be the Falcons thing to do, right?
Well, no, the Falcons thing to do would have been 99 when they went in and just got absolutely plastered by Denver.
Well, those things happen. You're right. This is a brand new day. None of those ghosts will be with you in Houston. We'll have Super Bowl coverage here on the airwaves starting at 2 o'clock. You have a big weekend ahead of you. Safe travels to Wisconsin. We'll read all about it at theindystar.com before, during, and after. And we thank you for your time this morning.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Glenn.
Zach Osterman, he's the beat writer for Hoosier Football and Basketball. You are up to date on a super busy week.